Today I'm going to begin my sermonette by took the intro of a book and thought it was very apropos and fit in very nicely with my sermonette. The book is called Decisive, and it's written by two brothers, the Heath brothers. And they start by introducing a story in this book, which we're going to go through now. Shannon, the head of a small consulting firm, is agonizing about whether to fire Clive, who is her IT director. Over the past year, Clive has consistently failed to do more than the minimum required of him. Now, he's not without his talents. He's intelligent, and he has a knack for finding ways to improvise cheaply for technical problems. But one of the problems is that he never takes any initiative. Worse, his attitude is poor, and in meetings he is often critical of people's ideas, sometimes caustically so. Unfortunately, losing Clive would cause problems in the short term, as he understands how to maintain the company's database of clients better than anyone else. So what would you advise her to do? Should she fire him, or should she keep him? Now, maybe in the past few seconds, your opinion of Clive has started to form. Maybe you feel you know enough of the information in the story to start offering advice. What would you do? Would you advise Shannon to fire Clive? Or would you encourage her to give him another chance? Either way, whatever your decision is, you most likely don't feel torn one way or the other. You made a decision. Now, the Clive situation is an example of the spotlight effect. And when we're offered information about Clive, such as he does the bare minimum, he doesn't take initiative, he has poor attitude, and his boss might fire him, we find it easy to take that readily available set of information and start drawing conclusions from it. The problem with a spotlight, though, is that it's just that. It only lights up one spot. Everything else outside of that spotlight is obscured. So in Clive's situation, we don't immediately think to ask some obvious questions. For instance, rather than fire Clive, why not change his role to match up better for his strengths? After all, he is good at improvising with cheap solutions. Or maybe Clive could be matched with a mentor who would help him set more ambitious goals and deliver less criticism. What if we dug deeper and discovered that Clive's colleagues adore his crusty, straight-talking ways? Maybe he's the IT version of, if you've ever seen a TV show, Dr. House. What makes us think that Shannon takes on Clive is accurate? What if she is a terrible manager? So when you start to shift the spotlight from side to side, the situation can look very different. Yeah, we couldn't make a very good decision about Clive without doing this spotlight shifting. But yet for us, developing an opinion was easy to do. Now, what's in the spotlight will rarely be very good for us to make a decision with. And there are times when we won't always remember to shift that light. Sometimes we'll even forget that there's a spotlight at all. Now, a psychologist named Daniel Kahneman says that we are quick to jump to conclusions because we give too much weight to the information that's right in front of us while failing to consider the information that's just off stage. Now, this story really emphasizes what I want to talk about, and that is assuming. Now, have you ever assumed that maybe you knew something about someone else, and you have been wrong about that assumption? Personally, I know I have. I've made bad judgment calls because I assumed, whether it was in business or in my personal life. Now, we are all accustomed, as I said, to seeing the facts that we want to see, and then we make decisions. But those decisions aren't always based on what is truly happening. You know, if we make assumptions about others without finding the truth, then we pass judgment. If you will turn to Matthew 7, in verse 1. Matthew 7 and verse 1, Christ says, "Judge not that you be not judged. For with what judgment you judged, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will also be measured back to you." Now, Christ's statements here are not a blanket rejection of all moral evaluation, but rather, as he points out in verses 3 through 5, we're to be taking a closer look at ourselves rather than being too hasty to judge others. We know Jeremiah 17 and verse 9 tells us that our heart is exceedingly corrupt, and who can know it? And verse 10 says, "I, Jehovah, search the mind, I try the heart, even to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his doings." God, then, is the only one who can truly know the hearts of men. Now, how can we pass judgment on situations that we are guessing or assuming at? You know, if there is a situation that we must make judgment calls on, then we need to pray and ask God that he will guide us. Now, 1 John 4, and verse 1. Paul was saying, 1 John 4, and verse 1, "Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone into the world." Paul is saying to find out what is true, not to make assumptions about someone based on what you think or know what you think that you see. Find out. That person that you may think is trying to harm you may not be trying to do that at all. And because you make assumptions, the situation can get worse, it can go blow up, or it can make an issue where there was none. We know what the Spirit of God looks like because he plainly states what it looks like many times throughout the Bible. It's easy to identify, both in ourselves and others. And if we are so worried about something, our best choice is to confront that. Instead of making judgment calls and clamming up, we need to reach out to get clarification on our thoughts. Matthew 26 and verse 52. Christ was quick to point out that compassion wins the day. Matthew 26, verse 52. Well, for context, let's read verse 51. And suddenly one of those who were with Jesus stretched out his hand, drew his sword, and struck the servant of the high priest. And Jesus said to him, "Put your sword in its place, for all who take the sword will perish by the sword. Or do you not think that I cannot pray to my Father, and he will provide me with more than 12 legions of angels?" Well, Christ's example here was to put tough personal situations that you may have into God's hands. Maybe we feel angry or upset, or maybe even betrayed, as I'm sure this person here who drew his sword felt. Now, destroying one another doesn't just happen with physical swords. It can happen with the words that we choose to use, with the way we choose to treat each other, and with the actions that we choose to make. And this is one of the main points here, is that we choose our actions, not God. You know, our free moral agency is always in play. We have to decide if we want to let God regulate us by his commandments, which is one of the reasons why he tells us to write them on our hearts. If you will turn to Proverbs 2, verse 1. Proverbs 2 and verse 1. "My son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands within you, so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding." Verse 3. "Yes, if you cry out for discernment and lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver and search for her as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God." Dropping down to verse 10, "When wisdom enters your heart and knowledge is pleasant to your soul, discretion will preserve you, understanding will keep you, to deliver you from the way of evil, from the man who speaks perverse things." And in chapter 3, in verses 1 through 6, "My son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commands. For length of days and long life, and peace they will add to you. Let not mercy and truth forsake you, and bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart, and so find favor and high esteem in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths." So assuming things about others without finding the truth, is wrong. It's easy to fall into this trap. As brethren, we need to give others the benefit of the doubt, to have mercy. And if the situation is very serious and is troubling, then we should talk about it. I've seen great resolution come from people talking to each other about what they interpreted in others to be wrong to them. Brethren, may God grant us the wisdom and the patience and understanding to resist from making the wrong assumptions about situations that we may encounter, but to give us guidance and wisdom in these things.